शाखया चाक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमापि सत्यपुत्रं मत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरूपरिं मातरिं गोष्ठावतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरं महो राधिकमधावशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतीक्तग्रीपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतस्मै। वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलाश्रुतिमन्दिरात्मालद्विते निराजिता पदपङ्कजन्त अजिमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितस्तं हरिणं संश्रयामि। नारपितचनिं चिरात् करुणयावतरुणाकलो समार्पयितुमुन्नतोष्मलरासं सभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरता सुन्दरद्युतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये कन्दरे स्फुरतु वासचिनन्दनः। जानलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदात् सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलायतक्ष विश्वम्भरो द्वियावरो जुगधर्मपाल वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो। लादिनीशक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गसुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमस्तुते। हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते मुकेशा गोपिका कन्त राधा कन्त नमस्तुते। राधे वृन्दवनादिशे करुणामृतवाहिने कृपया निजपादब्जा दशन्मयं प्रदीयतम्। भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षय क्षिप्तशाकमादितरङ्गमादे कृपामयि त्वं शरणं कृपानं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम्। वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम्। श्री सचिनन्दन गौर हरि की जय। श्री श्री गोनित्यानंद की जय। श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय। श्री श्री राधा गोविंद की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर परमानंद हरि बोल। या थैंक यू। सो वेलकम टू ऑल ऑफ यू। प्रणाम Nandavan, and thanks so much for being here with us today. Thank you so much to Pranada and Nagaraj for their invitation. It's always a pleasure to be here in the Nambajan Ashram. So hopefully we can imbibe, get some further samskars for our Nambajan, for our falling in love with the name of Krishna. So today we, as Pranada mentioned, we want to share a few words and continue to share some words on the topic of Mahaprabhu. We have been talking about him yesterday and somehow indirectly on our first lecture, addressing from one direction or another. I mean, if we are properly connected, whatever we talk about is related to our Istadev. And the Istadev, or the presiding deity of our Sampradaya, is Mahaprabhu. So if we are committed to our ideal, even if you are sweeping the floor at home, that's connected to Mahaprabhu, basically. That's the power of bhakti and the nature of bhakti and the all-encompassing, generous nature of bhakti, that everything can become bhakti. Everything can become an offering to your deity, basically. You don't need to stop sweeping the floor to make an offering to Mahaprabhu, basically, to give an example. So yesterday we were talking about Mahaprabhu as the apex of what we call tadatmya, or the principle of mystical empathy. And today I'd like to continue sharing another perspective in our warming up for Gaur Purnim. We are getting closer and closer to this celebration in whatever, 9-8 days or something, March 24th, if I'm not mistaken. So it's very proper that we prepare our hearts to enter into these very powerful special days. It's not enough that we get some alarm notification on that same day in the morning. And okay, it's Gaur Purnim today. Jai Mahaprabhu. What else I'm supposed to do? Okay, it's over, Gaur Purnim. Okay, see you next year, Mahaprabhu. That's not the idea, just in case. But we have to be building up to the occasion in such a way that it takes enough anticipation that our building up coincides with the previous overflowing of the previous celebration. So we'll build up for Gaur Purnim, we reach Gaur Purnim, then comes the overflowing of Gaur Purnim, and it extends to the next building up for the next Gaur Purnim. And in that way, we are inhabiting this constant dhara or current of celebration, of celebratory movement. That's what our movement is about. The movement of Sankirtan, it's a movement of celebration. Sankirtan in itself can be described as a celebratory movement, something that is moving so deeply inside of my heart that I cannot contain but start to move outside of my heart. My heart starts to take the shape of my body. My body starts to move, and that other movement creates its own movement. That's how Mahaprabhu's movement began. Something very deep was moving in his heart. He was tasting something very unique that made his heart move in a certain way, which made his body move in a certain way, which made everyone else move in a certain way. And here we are as a byproduct of that. And what we call the Krishna consciousness movement. But that movement is to begin with and always internal. We can have bricks and buildings and papers, all that stuff as a byproduct of other things. Those can never replace this movement. My heart is not moving. How much do I belong to a movement? A movement is moving. So the heart has to be moving. Mahaprabhu is a very moving deity. Sometimes in classical theism, not so much in our tradition, but in Christianity, they have described God as the unmoved mover. It's interesting. We will try to counteract that idea today, just in case. But sometimes the divine is seen as an unmoved mover. Not the ones who has started the whole creation process, the whole movements of the world, but he's unmoved. He doesn't move. He doesn't change. He's static. But we will try to show how our deity is not only static, but very ecstatic, very moving, very evolving. That's why we call today our lecture Mahaprabhu the all-evolving, the ever-evolving God, which again, it may create some questioning how God can be ever-evolving. Does it mean that if he evolves, he stops being God, or he was not God and he became God? Or can God become more God? What are you talking about? I'm talking about an ever-evolving God, and we'll prove that in a few minutes. And of course, this will be in the context of talking about Mahaprabhu, which in my opinion is the most evolving phase of the divine. But to talk about Mahaprabhu, we'll need to talk about love. Today will be some sort of dissertation about the nature of love. Because to speak about Mahaprabhu means to speak about Sri Radha. You cannot talk about one without the other. And to talk about Sri Radha is to talk about love, because Sri Radha is love personified, the very deity personification embodiment of divine love. So we'll speak in that order today, with your permission, not without it, no problem. I already made my mind. So we'll be talking about the nature of love as ever evolving, the nature of Radha's love more precisely as ever, ever evolving, and the nature then of God being impacted by that love, especially in the form of Mahaprabhu, as ever evolving, and what's our place in the midst of such an ever evolving scenario, and what's our prospect, what's our potential. So basically, I will try to make that point, to make the case that God is an ever-evolving person. God becomes more God. Krishna becomes more Krishna. They do not stop being that, but they can become more and more. They can grow in their experience of love, because the nature of love is, again, ever-evolving, ever-fresh, ever-expanding. And what Mahaprabhu in particular is tasting is of an ever-evolving nature. And what we are destined or invited to taste by being part of his lineage is therefore offering us an ever-evolving prospect as well. And therefore, in one sense, the gift has already came to us fully, and in another sense, the gift keeps expanding forever. So we can never claim we have it completely, because it keeps growing. And that's what keeps the whole spiritual domain going on. There's always some news, so to say. And the importance of developing, we'll try to make that clear, the importance of developing a dynamic view of spiritual life, a dynamic view of reality as something that is in constant, ongoing movement, growth, development, expansion. It's not stagnant issue. It's not something that we achieve, and that's it. There's nothing else to achieve. There's nothing else to experience, and so on and so forth. Because if we, God is the root of reality, so to say, the divine is the very root of existence. Whatever exists is connected with this center. So if we have the correct idea of the center, we will probably have an accurate idea of whatever is expanding from that center, connected to that center. In other words, changing our perspective of God has the potential to change everything. If we have a wrong perspective of God, if we think of God as changeless, static, immutable, basically boring and unremarkable, then most probably we are extending that same view to whatever else exists that is in connection to him. But if we had the accurate idea of God as an exciting, ever-evolving, ever-expanding reality, therefore, we have a hint that whatever is connected to the divine, which happens to be everything, somehow shares a similar DNA, evolutionary DNA in that sense. And we are invited into a prospect of, again, ever-evolvingness. We can conceive our life and our practice in those terms as an ongoing process, not so much as a place to arrive, but as a constant arrival of newer and deeper experiences. So as Pranada shared a spoiler, it happens that I'm writing something on these topics. Yes, I must confess, I don't have an escape now, since Pranada has established the fact. So yeah, I'll share some thoughts in connection to that, what I have been reading so far on this topic. I'm not quite close to the end of that, but we have been writing something. So let me begin with a few words on love. The nature of love is ever evolving. And the nature of, eventually the nature of Radha's love is ever evolving, and the nature of God experiences ever evolving. So sometimes for the word love, we in Sanskrit in our tradition may resort to different words, different terms. Bhakti can be one of those, no problem. You can speak ultimately in terms of prem bhakti, in the full face of bhakti, which coincides with love. And bhakti is a shakti. Bhakti is an energy. Bhakti is a potency. It's called bhakti shakti. Right, Pranada? There is a book with that title? Okay, seems you happen to have written that. So it's called Bhakti Shakti. She's promoting my books, I'm promoting hers. Let's see who wins the competition. So Bhakti is inherently an energetic force. No, it's a potency. And energy by nature renews itself. Any potency by nature has potential. Try to follow my terms. No, any potency has a potential. Any potency is something and has the potential to be something else. And any potency is renewing itself. So it includes this possibility of perpetual novelty, perpetual unfolding, ever newness. That's natural with any potency, with any energy. What to speak about the primordial energy we call love. That's where all these attributes will be found in the utmost expression. So when we achieve love, when we achieve sacred love, divine love, the person who has love cannot shift back to unlove, so to say. In that sense, love has no opposite. If you really love, you cannot not love. If you shift from love to unlove, then that was not love to begin with. Because the real nature of love is it has no contrary. It's so special by itself, love, that it can only become more of that. It can never become its opposite or its contrary. Love can only become further love. Follow my point? So love can only evolve into a deeper expression of itself. That's what the real love is. No, it's not something that turns into hate, because sometimes people speak in, no, I have this relationship with my wife of love and hate, and sometimes we love each other, but sometimes we are just basically seeing who kills each other first. And it's like, well, let's redefine love then, because that idea is including a few possibilities that go against the very core of love. So real love has no contrary, no opposite, has no rival. It can only grow exponentially. Mm-hmm. So for us, the goal of life is love. And we call that bhakti, prem bhakti. But for us, bhakti is also the means. So that's a very important point here that we have in our tradition. Bhakti is both sadhana and sadhya. It's the means and it's the goal. So one way, we are already doing what we want to be doing for eternity. In one way, there is nowhere to go, as we were talking the other day. I'm already practicing bhakti, and I'm doing bhakti for the sake of bhakti. So I'm already doing what I want to do forever. So in that sense, I'm already saved. And I'm saying that hopefully with some humble confidence. There's place for that. There's a place for us to feel, I'm already saved. I already arrived to the goal of my life, because the goal of my life is bhakti. In one sense, I didn't arrive to the goal of my life. The goal of my life arrived to me. Bhakti came to my door. Bhakti knocked. And I happened to be at home and I opened. And here we are. So that's a very interesting idea. And that's what the Bhagavatam is teaching. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhakti takes to further bhakti. Bhakti comes from bhakti and bhakti goes to bhakti. You receive bhakti from bhakti, and whenever you have bhakti, that takes you to more bhakti. Because there is nothing higher than that. If there will be some other goal apart from bhakti, that goal will be the supreme. But the supreme, as we say, is love, and their love has no competition, no opposite. It can only become more love. And bhakti is such a goal that not only is the goal and the means, bhakti is also the goal for us, and bhakti is the goal for God. The goal of life is love for us and for Krishna. Of course, we could say, but Krishna already has love. Yes, but again, the nature of love is such that you can never have enough. You can always have more love. So Krishna is experiencing love, but it doesn't mean that he's fully satiated with that experience. He can always taste a new layer, a new flavor of love. And that's what keeps his life going on. In Sanskrit, the goal of life is called, we say that yesterday, I think, prayojan. Prem prayojan. Prem means divine love. Prayojan means, generally it's translated as goal or attainment, but also prayojan means necessity. So we could say that prem is the ultimate necessity, divine love is the ultimate necessity, satisfies all other necessities and gives you the real thing. Or we can also say prem is the ultimate necessity which creates its own necessities. Love creates its own necessity, satisfies all needs, and creates a new need, which is love for the sake of further love, for the sake of further love, and so on and so forth. That's the nature of love. Love is never satisfied with itself. Love is non-conformist, basically. If you have real love, you will never feel, okay, I have prem, I can take a rest now, I don't need to do anything else because I have prem. I arrived to my goal, so I will take rest eternally, or I take a break from all this stuff of loving God and all that, that idea won't cross your mind, because the very nature of love is Hari Bhagati Primna Shabhava Kurti Labhave, says Rupa Goswami. Which means the nature of love is that it moves like a snake, which means it moves in a crooked way. It moves in an unpredictable motion. It's not predictable. It's not a straight line. It's not something you can calculate, control, measure. It's flowing, basically. It's moving. It's growing. It's expanding. Another word for the highest goal of life, to be even more specific, is the word of rasa. And the term rasa indicates the pinnacle of love, bhakti rasa, bhakti rasamrita sindhu. And rasa, technically speaking, translates as juice. It's something liquid, basically. It's something fluid. Rasa is the essential fluid, so to say, the quintessential fluid. It's the most fundamental of all flows. Love, it's flowing. Love, it's moving. Again, love is like a current. In fact, the personification of love, as we said, is Sri Radha. And the nature of her love is that it's always moving and flowing like a current. That's why if you repeat Radha enough times, it becomes Dhara. And Dhara in Sanskrit means current. So Radha is a Dhara. It's a current, ever flowing, ever new. So that's the nature of love. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Hai tukiya pratihata. Bhakti is apratihata, or unbroken. No, the current of love is unbroken, uncontainable. It's uncontainable. Uncontainable, you say in English? Okay. Uncontainable. Like, which word? Like, love is like relentless. That's the nature of love. Relentless. That's how it moves. That's the pace of love, of real, true love. And as I said, the more love we have, the more love we want to have, or the more love we realize we can have. And that creates the unique subjective experience that the more love I have, the less love I think I have, by contrasting how much more love I can have. How much more love I can love. That's why in the scriptures it is said, one who has love will think he has no love, she has no love. It's not something that, okay, if I someday I achieve love, I have to say that I don't have love, so to seem humble to my tribe. No, no, you don't need to even calculate that. It will be a natural reality. Because again, if someone has love, Mahaprabhu will say that. Na priyama gandha sti dalapi hayo me. In me, there is not even this scent of prem, of love. Even if you have, the example is this little, like, locklets with, locklet, they say? Locket with, how do you call these lamps? Not with ghee, the other one. I'll come forward. Comes a Spanish word to my
insights. Yeah.
Camphor. Thank you. So you have a camphor in a little locket, and you take out the camphor, it's still some scent is there. But Mahaprabhu is saying, not even the scent of that is in my heart, of love. But then you see Mahaprabhu and he's Prem Purushottam. He's God when he wants to be in love, really, in every sense of the word. But he's saying, I don't have even the scent of that. And he is not lying. I mean, he's not like making a show. He's really meaning it. So what must be his subjective experience? Or like we were saying the other day, someone like Bhaktivinoda Thakur will sing in his Sharanagati prayers many things, especially in one song called Amar Jivana. And he will say among one many things, I am full of lust. So that's interesting. Because you have a few options there. One, to conclude, okay, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is full of lust. He's confessing his crime here, which I hope that's not an option you are entertaining. Because if you study his life, you will realize he's not full of lust at all. Second option is, well, he's writing these things for us, So he's kind of thinking about us and writing something so we can somehow connect with our particular situation through his song. But to be honest, that's not an option, at least for me. I don't think he's calculating to that level while composing his song. The fact that he writes so directly from his heart is what allows us to read those songs and being able to sing from our hearts as well. So what's the third option? That's a good question. I remember once I was in that conundrum. Okay, option one, not possible. Option two, not possible. But which is option three? I mean, he's saying he's full of lust. What to do with that? And I remember some idea came, was not my own, it came from somewhere on that moment, and it was basically this, that the nature of love is such, as we were mentioning, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has divine love, but he's having a hint of how much more divine love one can attain. So by comparison to how much more love there is in potential, he compares that to the love he has, which is in still divine love. And he says, I'm full of lust. Subjectively, he experiences his divine love as being full of lust, by contrast to how much more love is there to explore and attain and serve and honor. Again, this is very particularly subjective, but we have many of these statements in the Shastra, which again point to the nature of love. The more love we have, the less love we think we have, because the more love we realize we can attain in this ever-evolving dynamic. That's why Sanatana Goswami says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that Daini and Prem, humility and love, are synonymous somehow. One takes to the other. You have love, that creates a greater humility. You embrace that humility, that increases your love. The more love you have, the more humble you become. The more humble you become, the more love you have. Both act as cause and effect of one another. That's the nature of love. It's paradoxical. Prema Samput, which is another beautiful treatise on love, will say something similar to that effect. Now, Prema Samput says, if one dares to proclaim this, whatever that this is, this defines the limits of love. Prema Samput says, then that person knows nothing about love. Someone dares to establish, these are the limits of love. That really makes it clear you have no clue what love is about. Because love is boundless, has no limits. It's constantly expanding its limits. Or similarly, sometimes it is said in those sections, those who say I love you know nothing about love. In the sense of how much more I can love. But to say I love you sometimes, I mean, I'm not here canceling if any of you is falling, is in your honeymoon these last weeks. I mean, you have a license to say that, no problem. Try to get my point, which has more to do with if I really see how much love there is to experience, and again, that's not a limited number, to say I love you will be like bring closure to that experience of love, instead of keeping the door open for further loving and further loving and further loving. So we can say, I love you, and we can quickly qualify the statement. And because I love you, I'm sure I can love you more and more forever. That's even more romantic. So try that one. Instead of, I love you, period. I've reached my limit, there is no limit, technically speaking. So that's the nature of love. That's the nature of love. It's always creating newer expressions of that. So I hope I make that point clear. And having said a few words on the nature of love, a few words on the nature of Radha's love, which is, I mean, she is the embodiment of love. So whatever we say so far applies to her for sure. But now let's qualify that a little bit further. And all this, remember, this in the context of warming up for Gorpunim. Don't lose sight of the bigger picture. All this is trying to understand the nature of love, trying to understand the nature of Radha's heart, which basically is what Mahaprabhu is trying to do. Krishna's Mahaprabhu is trying to understand love. What's love in his life, and so on. So again, Sri Radha's love incarnate, so to say, God's own heart assuming a distinctive form, an identity and qualities, and perpetually engaging with Krishna and Leela. And I know this may sound a little complex, because Radha in one sense is described as an energy, but that energy takes a particular shape, particular identity, and interacts with the divine. Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that many times, like, in one sense, Radha and Krishna are one. For example, some people will say, they are one soul in two bodies. They are one. They are like musk, you say? And it's scent, the scent of musk and musk. They're inseparable. You cannot separate fully Radha and Krishna. Whereas fire and its heat are none different. In the same way, Radha and Krishna are one in essence. Yet, bit by bit, they take separate forms for the sake of loving interaction. That's what we call Leela. So in this separate form, love personified, Sri Radha exhibits the highest degree of affection, of unconditional love. And tomorrow we'll be talking at Dira Govinda Prabhu's place on God's unconditional love toward us and how healing that is, and how important that is to bear in mind. But also, we can speak in the other direction, and that's Radha showing unconditional love to Krishna. Krishna is giving unconditional love, but he's receiving unconditional love. He's being loved by Radha under all conditions. That's what she says in the last verse of Shikshasaka, which is said to be had been spoken by Sri Radha. That prananatastu saiva napara. No matter what Krishna does, he's a lampata. We know he's a playboy. He's a womanizer. His reputation is not precisely the best. No, he likes to steal. He likes to lie. He likes to do mischief. He's a womanizer. But Sri Radha says, he's my prananath. He's the Lord forever and ever. He will be the master of my pran, of my, not even my breath, no, but of my. Sri Radha doesn't breathe. She's sighing. When you're like, when you are in love, you are not breathing. Like, you are like. So, prananath in this context means that. No? He's the Lord of her. So no matter how Krishna behaves, she embraces me, she says, she rejects me, my love for him is fixed. It's not multi-branched. Krishna's love is multi-branched. He has so many devotees he has to attend. He cannot neglect any of them. So his love is somehow divided among so many devotees. But the love of Sri Radha is one-pointed toward Krishna, and ever increasing. Again, don't forget this part, main point of today. Radha's love is ever increasing. Yesterday, we'll briefly describing one of the symptoms of her love called anurag, which takes her to increase her love to a new height at every moment, to the point that that new love will reveal a new Krishna to her. Because when you love someone, that person appears newer at every moment. So if your love keeps expanding, that person keeps appearing in expanded ways, in ever new ways. So that's the logic why Sri Radha is seeing Krishna and saying, oh, I never met that boy. Who is that boy? She starts to ask Lalita Vishaka, who is that sapphire-like rain cloud walking, playing the flute? And she will say, oh, you have been with him 15 seconds ago. I said, no, it's not possible. It's not possible. It's not that same person. Something has been upgraded here. No. That's the nature of love. No? In the same way with our cell phones and all this stuff, if you don't download the latest version of the app, if you don't update and upgrade, it becomes obsolete. It becomes non-operative. So the nature of love is constantly downloading the latest version of love that keeps the whole Leela functional. So So that's the nature of love, and of Radha's love in particular. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, the love of Sri Radha is all-pervading, and this is a paradoxical description, is all-pervading, leaving no room for expansion, yet increasing at every second. This statement is to take our head, to throw our head through the window and be ready to embrace love from other perspective. How can something that leaves no room for expansion increase at every second? How can something that is all-pervading already there become more present there in a newer expanded form? So Rupa Goswami also describes the paradoxical nature of love, all-pervading, yet ever-increasing, the most profound and grave and heavy, at the same time the most light-hearted, completely straight and pure, yet full of crookedness. All that put together in the mix is Radha's love, Radha's heart. Paradoxical. Love is a paradox. And better we do well with paradoxes, because paradoxes hold the most truth. If you want to conceive reality without this layer of paradox, you will be left with a shallow version of reality. Reality in its ultimate phase includes paradox, includes those things which seem contradictory on some level, but attain a higher synthesis and a deeper level. So Radha's love is paradoxical. Radha's love is, how to describe it? In the words of Rupa Goswami, Radha's love is competent love. If you would use that expression, samartha rati, which means competent. Competent for what? Competent to subjugate Krishna completely. He speaks of other types of love, sadharani rati, samanjasa rati. We won't go today into the definitions of each, but the love of the gopis and Sri Radha in particular is described as samartha rati, which means competent love, competent to subjugate, to capture, to attract the all-attractive. Krishna is the all-attractive, but Krishna is the all-attracted also. Again, paradox. The all-attractive becomes all-attracted. By whom? By her. And to that point, he wonders about her love also. No? Krishna witnesses the degree of Radha's love and starts to wonder, what must that be about? Here we have again a glimpse into the quote-unquote beginnings of Gaur Lila, although it's an eternal reality. But somehow the origin of Gaur Lila is traced to Krishna wondering about how competent is Radha's love. What's her adhikar for love, her eligibility? As we were describing yesterday, in this hike of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is about Radha's love. As we mentioned yesterday, if you pay a close attention to even the title of the Bhagavatam, you don't need even to open its pages to realize what the book is about. And it's about Srimad. No, you don't need even to go to the second word of the of the title. Srimad, stop there. There you have the essence of the Bhagavatam. I mean, I'm not suggesting you don't study the book, but I'm just saying, in the same way that if you have eyes to see, you see the Gita's cover and you understand what's the whole book is about. It's about a type of bhakti in which God becomes so conquered that he ends up being your Uber, your servant, your driver. In the same way, you go to the Bhagavatam's title, Srimad, you can already have a glimpse of what the book is about. Srimad is about the Mada, or the madness, in Sanskrit is Mada, of Sri, which is the name of Radha. It's about Radha's madness of love. That's where the whole Bhagavatam is building up to, and reaching to that zenith point in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, when Krishna himself is witnessing that love, as Tamal Krishna, camouflaged behind this Tamal tree, witnessing the Gopi Gita of the Braja Gopikas, especially Sri Radha's heart blossoming in separation, and thinking, I have disappeared from this Rasa Lila with the purpose of increasing the love of my Gopis, which nonetheless increases with or without separation, but it was an special increasing. But now Krishna is realizing, that was my purpose mainly, but now I'm discovering a new purpose here, which is a personal one. I want to taste, I'm curious about experience of Radha's heart. What's the nature of her love for me? What's the happiness she derived from that love? What's the beauty she perceives in me as a result of that love? These are the three primary reasons for the descent of Mahaprabhu. And Sanatana Goswami mentions in his commentary to Napariham Nirabhadya Samjyam Sasadu Kritam Vibhudaya Sapipa, and so on. He says, in this verse, Gaur avatar, the descent of Mahaprabhu, is being hinted at. When Krishna is saying, I cannot repay your love. No? I cannot even start to conceive how much is the debt, as you were saying the other day. Now, one thing is that you have a huge debt and you cannot repay, but you know how much is the debt. And then you make the numbers, take the calculator, see how much savings you have and realize, I cannot pay this. But what if when you try to calculate how much is the love, the calculator collapses. Calculator will send you a message that this is too much to be calculated. This is, how to say, incalculable? No, there's no calculate, this is unmeasurable. There's no number to describe this, sorry. That's Krishna's situation when facing the love of Sri Radha and the gopis. Like, this is so much, I cannot even fathom, have a glimpse, a hint of how much is my debt. What to speak of being able to pay it back? I don't even know how much do I owe. I'm eternally indebted. I'm an eternal debtor. That's the God we worship. Now, those are the moments when we will say our loudest ki jai. When Krishna is saying, I'm in debt forever. Jai, go. God accepting defeat in the face of love, basically. Of love personified. But God being shaped by that love at the same time. No? Krishna is so impacted by that love. I mean, the love of Sri Radha makes Krishna who he is. That's an important point also that we must learn. And for me, that's a very beautiful idea, very Gaudi idea, which is this one. Now, God is a byproduct of love. Maybe sounds a little like bold to say it like that, but I'm saying it, I will repeat it again just in case. God is a byproduct of love. It's not that he started to exist at some point, but my point is, whatever form of the divine we know is the result of him, so to say, being impacted by a certain type of love. You put Hanuman love, the byproduct of that is called Ramachandra. You put Gopakumar's love, the byproduct of that is called Krishna and Vrindavan in Sakyaras, with its own defining features. You put the Jai Vijay in love, the result of that will be Narayan in Vaikuntha. So in that sense, whatever type of love you have, that carves out a particular form of the divine. There's no more depictive lila than this one when Krishna was with the gopis. And he suddenly disappears from the Rasa Lila. It happens. and just joking, Krishna adopts the form of Narayan. No? So Krishna becomes God just to joke. So that's an interesting point. No? When Krishna wants to tell a joke, he becomes God. Well, that's his joking style. Let's be God for a while. Let's have a good, let's crack for a while. Let's become God. That seems funny, let's say. So he becomes God, no? Interesting, Gaudiya theology is quite interesting. So some gopis are looking for Krishna desperate, and that's in itself very telling, the first thing that happens, and this lila is narrated in Gita Govinda and many places. Chaitanya Chaitanya, they meet God, but they're looking for Krishna. They were looking for Krishna. They were looking for Krishna, and they suddenly meet God. So that's like a change of plans. No? So what to do now? Is this new meeting more important than the object of our search, or which are the hierarchies here now? I'm looking for Krishna, and God appears. So again, in the Gopi psychology, there's only one question to ask God, which is, where is Krishna? because you are God. We have heard that you know everything, so you must have the information, the address. Where is Krishna? That's the only question we have to ask you, God. And Krishna as Narayan is like flabbergasted, you say? Like, how these ladies can be so wild in love with me that they just only have one question to even ask God, which is, they are obsessed with me. Even if God appears, they only have the question, where is Krishna? This is too much. So Krishna doesn't reply to the gopis. Remember, the gopis are asking Narayan, quote unquote, where is Krishna? And Krishna is like in shock by the love of the gopis. And he doesn't reply. So the gopis say, God is not speaking, so let's continue looking for Krishna. And they continue running. For whatever reason, God is not responding, so we won't lose any further time here with God. We have to look for Krishna. So they continue running. So you can imagine Krishna at that point is easily, what's going on here? Oh, this is too much. How can someone love me that much? I hear that I'm special. I hear I'm all attractive, I'm beautiful, but the way they love me makes me wonder, what do they see in me? I mean, I do not deny there must be something special in me, because if not, they wouldn't be that crazy in love with me. But what's that? And so this type of thinking is what eventually converges into Mahaprabhu wanting to understand what's that about them and about himself. And as we know, eventually, Sri Radha appears after the gopis. And that's another layer of teaching there, because Krishna is still as Narayan, Chaturbhuj, four arms, trying to play God in the Leela. And Sri Radha stands in front of Narayan, but her love is of such impact and power that Krishna cannot keep his forms as Narayan. No? And he starts to become crooked and crooked and crooked and crooked and taking the... No? Like, and that is very telling, because that's saying the form of Krishna is a byproduct of Radha's love. You put Radha's love in front, Krishna cannot keep his Narayan form, because that's not a form corresponding with that love. His form is shaped out of love. So again, the form of Krishna in Vrindavan is shaped by the love of the Vrajavasis, and the form of Mahaprabhu is shaped specifically by the love of Radha, in the sense of Krishna wanting to explore and experience what's her about and what's him about in connection to her. So let's go to the next section, which I'd like to share a few words in reaching our conclusion. And we already talked about love as ever-evolving, and the nature of love, and the nature of Radha's love as not only evolving, but paradoxical and completely shaping Krishna himself. So a few words on God himself. And if love is ever-evolving, if Radha's love is ever-evolving, God must be ever-evolving as well. That should be the conclusion, because God is always in connection to love. So if love is ever evolving, God must be evolving in his experience of love. However, let's bring some Purva Paksha, some counter arguments to this. Someone may say, and rightfully so, but Maharaj, in the scriptures, it is described that Krishna is changeless. Over and over again, we find different descriptions like abhikriyam and other abhyayam and other expressions in Sanskrit. God is changeless. So how can someone be changeless and ever evolving? Again, welcome to the realm of paradox. Now, how can be some? And that's interesting. Now, for example, Rupa Goswami in his Bhaktarasamrita Sindhu, he gives 64 qualities to Krishna. Of course, he has more than 64, but it's a way of talking about that. And quality 51 is Krishna is changeless. Quality 53, almost the next one, is Krishna is nitya nutana, which means ever fresh. So again, you have to integrate these two. How can someone be changeless and ever fresh? Ever fresh means new at every moment and changeless. And Rupa Goswami himself says in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, when we find two statements that seem to contradict with one another, we shouldn't cherry pick the one we like the most, but we should learn to synthesize and reconcile and integrate both. So God is changeless in many ways, no? In the sense that God is always God. He doesn't become something else, or it's not that he was not God and he became God. So in that sense, he's changeless. God is always God. God is always, he's not going through the temporary changes of accepting material bodies as we may be going through. So that's another way in which the scriptures qualify this idea of God being changeless. And God is changeless in the fact that he's always changing in the experience of love. That doesn't change about him. If there is something that doesn't change about God, is that he's always changing. But changing in the sense of experiencing newer and newer layers of divine love. And that connects with the ever-freshness. Nitya Nutana, or Navayovanam. You have heard that expression of Krishna, Navayovanam. He's always young, always fresh, always new. In fact, the very word, if you want to go a little bit before to that, to the Upanishadic descriptions of the Absolute, the main word that is used in the Upanishads is Brahman, for God, Brahman. Sometimes we may understand Brahman as the impersonal aspect of God, but in one sense, Brahman refers to the Absolute in general, whether it's personal, impersonal, Brahman. And Brahman means that which is expansive. That's the meaning of Brahman. Because interestingly, for many of us, Brahman is impersonal, no movement, nothing going on there. But the actual root of the word Brahman, the dhatu, the Sanskrit root is brim. And brim is translated as growth, expansion, evolution, development. If you go to the Sanskrit dictionary, swelling of the spirit, outpouring of the heart, all those are the root of the word Brahman. And of course, Mahaprabhu is the supreme Brahman, the volcanic Brahman. If Brahman means outpouring of the heart, well, better you fasten your seatbelt when you face the golden Brahman, so to say, you know, Sri Chaitanya Dev. So in this way, we can harmonize the idea that, yes, God is changeless and at the same time ever fresh. Someone may bring another argument or Purva Paksha, but God is perfect. So, and we agree, God is perfect. But what's the meaning of perfect? Perfect doesn't mean a fixed maximum. Because sometimes we will conceive perfect as such. No, a fixed maximum. You achieve that, that's it. But that in itself is limiting to the idea of perfection. No? A perfection that keeps growing is more perfect than a perfection that is a fixed maximum. So we choose how to understand perfection, you know, as a fixed attainment or as a permanent attainment. Something that continues to lean levels of perfection. That's what Rupa Goswami does in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He describes Krishna in Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. And he uses the word perfect in the three cases. Now, Krishna in Dwarka is Purna. He's complete or perfect. He's in Dwarka. In Mathura, he's Purnatara. He's more perfect, which starts to look, more perfect. Okay. Still perfect, but more perfect. And in Vrindavan, he's Purnatama. He's most perfect. Still, all the other forms are perfect. So again, he establishes this foundation of perfection, but then he opens the door for further perfection. Krishna in Vrindavan is most perfect Purnatama. We can, following this logic, we are talking about Mahaprabhu here. The Mahakrishna in Nadia is Purnatamatama. He's most perfect. As yesterday we gave this definition that Gaur Govinda Maharaj gave. No? Krishna in Vrindavan is an unripe mango, which may sound like an insult out of context. No? And in Navadvip, he's a ripe mango. No? The mellow is fully ripe. The attainment is more perfect. So therefore, there is the possibility of God experiencing never-evolving taste of love. On one side, God is Atmaram, self-satisfied. On another side, God is Pararam, in the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, divinely dissatisfied. Because love creates false satisfaction, love creates dissatisfaction, a thirst for more. In that sense, dissatisfaction. You can always be attained yet on a new level, on a deeper level. Let me share one verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita that I wanted to show with you in this connection. It says like this: both the gopis and Krishna are complete. We are talking about perfection and completeness. Both are complete. The gopis' ecstatic love is like a mirror that becomes newer and newer at every moment and reflects Krishna's beauty and sweetness. Thus, competition increases between Krishna's beauty and the gopis' love. And one increases and the other increases. Since neither give up, their loving interaction becomes newer and newer, and experience in both sides constantly increase. Just for you to know that I'm not coming here with my own Siddhanta. This is described very clearly here in the scripture. God has, divine love brings self-satisfaction to God, but it creates a new thirst, new yearning, a new longing for more, a new dissatisfaction, so to say. So we can talk about God as a noun and about God as a verb, a very active verb in terms of becoming. God is a divine being, but we can call also God is a divine becoming. As we are human beings, but on top of that, we are human becomings. We should see ourselves in terms of our potential, not only who we are, but all that we can attain in love. So that's a very interesting idea. And we have to see God not only for who he is, but for all that he is to be in the experience of love. A theologian, Franciscan nun friend of mine, she will say, we have the Godhead and we have the God ahead. We have God and we have God in terms of potential, on all that he is about to experience. So the Godhead and the God ahead. The divine being and the divine becoming. The divine becoming of the divine being. So Mahaprabhu is that. No? Mahaprabhu is God experience being totally satisfied as being God, but experiencing a profound neediness, a profound desire to taste certain experience, to go deep into that, and to taste Radha, of course. No? So that makes our God makes God very vulnerable. Generally, God is depicted as the Almighty, but that's one half of the equation. The other half is God is all vulnerable. Almighty, all vulnerable. Vulnerability has to do with emotional exposure, risk, uncertainty. All those things makes us vulnerable. And when Krishna tries to taste Radha Bhav, it has to do with all of that. Risk, what will happen? That's such a risky project. Uncertainty, what will happen? Emotional exposure, God exposed to Radha's emotions. And since the love of Radha is ever evolving, the experience of Mahaprabhu is ever evolving, because that's an important argument. I remember a few years ago I was having a conversation with a devotee from Advaita Parivar, and that was an interesting conversation because it began as a informal chat, and it ended up as a like 3-day conversation that ended up in a series of articles and the prospect of a whole book about it. So that was a good conversation. Although each one continues with their stance, but it was a nice interaction. He will tell me basically there is no Nitya Navadvip. No, there is no eternal prospect to serve Mahaprabhu in the Nitya Lila. Why? Because the Goswamis never wrote about that directly. Of course, I won't repeat all the conversation we had, and it took 3 days. But of course, I had my points to make, he had his points to make. We are friends, so it went well. But at the end, for me, besides all the Shastra and all the logic that came to me and I share with him, for me, the final boiling down to conclusion was the love of Sri Radha is a bottomless ocean. Therefore, for Krishna to explore Radha's heart, that requires an eternal Leela of itself. It's not that he came on earth, he tasted Radha Bhav. He was successful, we won't deny that. But again, what's successful? in terms of exploring something that is boundless. You can only be successful if you continue to try your best at every moment for eternity. For that, we need a corresponding state, which we call Nityanavada. So in that sense, we will present this idea. Mahaprabhu is an ever-evolving God, and he's perpetually dedicated to explore those depths in Nityanavada. And of course, we are invited to assist him in such project, in such experiment. So having mentioned a few words on how love is ever-evolving, Radha's love is ever-evolving, God's heart and experience is ever-evolving, just concluding with two words and we. Now, what about us in the midst of all this, of love and God and so on and so forth? So if all of reality, love, God is ever-evolving, we have a potential to be ever-evolving as well if we contact these ever-evolving substances. Again, we are Shakti, we are Tathasta Shakti, we are potency. So being potency, we have potential. We are units of potential. That's how we can define ourselves. And our potential is wonderful. Once Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say that to one of his students. He will look at him, or I will say he will look through him or through her, whomever. He will say, your future is brilliant. Four words coming from a very significant person. That's more than enough. So your future is brilliant. So he saw that person's prospect, that soul's potential in love. This is brilliant. This is similar to how Krishna describes the soul in the Bhagavad Gita. First, he does so in negative terms, what the soul is not. Soul cannot be killed, cannot be dried, cannot be burned, cannot this, cannot that, it's not this. And when he has to say something positive about us, he says what to say. Okay, Ascharyabhat, Ascharyabhat, Ascharyabhat. He repeats three times the word Ascharyabhat, which basically means wonderful. It's like, you're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Wow. That's his statement about who we are. And I will say that's his statement about who we are in potential also. When Krishna is looking at us, he's not only seeing who we are, but all that we can be in love. Now that's the generosity of Krishna, of Mahaprabhu in particular. They are not seeing us for who we were, for what we did, for who we are, for what we are doing, but for all that we can be in our brightest potential. That's their version of us to them. That's who we are in their eyes. All that we can be in our brightest potential. That's a generosity. That's how a sadhu will look at any soul. Not in terms of your present mischief, person's state of disorder, but oh, this is your brightest potential. Let's invest into that. Let's help in that direction. And again, bhakti is ever evolving. And we are trying to practice bhakti. So if bhakti is ever evolving and we are connected with bhakti, our prospect in bhakti is ever evolving. We don't have in one sense to reach a goal in bhakti, because the goal is always two steps ahead. It's always increasing. If the goal is love, but love is moving and expanding, so you can always reach more love. So as I said before, in one sense, we already achieved the goal, because bhakti already came to us. The goal came to us. So in one sense, we already achieved the goal. In another sense, we will never achieve the goal, because it's always expanding. It's always growing. So I'm saying this just to cancel this idea of meritocracy, that I'm here on this world and I have to do this to reach that place. And once I'm there, I'm done. No. You're already doing what you want to do for eternity. Just continue doing it. That's it. And it continue increasing forever. It's not about being here, being there, reaching there. I mean, you have already been reached by the goal itself, bhakti. And bhakti is ever evolving, so you can always attain further bhakti. So the question of reaching somewhere, it's over. It's just a matter of how can I increase my loving dedication. Ultimately, that's the only question that the devotee has to present. Kim kara. That's the meaning of kim kara. Kim karomi. What can I do? How can I serve? How can I increase the embrace of loving experience? So some thoughts I want to share today in connection to the ever-evolving nature of love, of Radha's love in particular, how that impacts God himself to the point that he appears as Mahaprabhu. And again, here we are as a byproduct of that. So we are celebrating us being a consequence of all the things. And the importance of having an accurate idea, again, of who God is, because if we misinterpret God as static, changeless, and nothing more than that, probably we'll start to see everything else and everyone else in those same terms. Instead of seeing everything as ever-evolving, moving realities, we will be seeing them as inert substances. And we'll start to relate to each other even as things, not as moving realities. We'll start to objectify each other. It happens. We have a great potential. We have a very bright potential in love, but we have also a great potential in the opposite direction, which indirectly shows how much bright potential we have in love. So, and again, if there is one form of God that we have to describe as ever evolving, that's Mahaprabhu, ever fresh, ever new, ever curious, no, to go further into his exploration. So we are celebrating that. We are celebrating this spirit of Krishna being affected by Radha's heart to the point of becoming such a volcanic force in our lives and giving us that example of perpetual curiosity, perpetual openness to further growth. So hopefully we can also, as representatives of that, as servants of that, become imbibed of those attributes, and remain open, humbly open to bhakti and further growth in eternity for the rest of forever. Shri Sachinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai. So some thoughts, trying to continue the warming up for Gaur Purnim. We'll leave a few minutes if you have any questions, something you might like to share. Also, not necessarily a question, it can be a comment, a thought, a reflection, contribution to the cause of Gaur Katha.
Earlier when you first started speaking and you were talking, I hope I get this right. Let's see if I get it right. That humility and our love, the more humility we have, the more love we can love Krishna with, and the more love we give with Krishna is the more humility we can have. Something like that. I'm a little confused. I'm sure I'm not saying it right, but I think you mean increasing humility increases our love, and our love then increases our humility.
Yes.
And this goes together.
Yeah.
Eternally.
Yeah. Yeah. You can always become more humble. You can always become more loving. And the more humble, the more loving, the more loving, the more humble. That's Sanatana Goswami's words in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And we were explaining that again in connection to the nature of love as always growing and expanding, and why those who have that love will feel they do not have that love, will express their humility in that sense, like, I don't have it. They are not like excessively assertive in terms of, I have love. Because again, Srila Siddha Maharaj will say, that's a beautiful line, although it's overwhelming, overwhelmingly beautiful. He'll say, the closer you get to the infinite, the more you will realize there is no limit to progress. No, you get closer to the infinite and you realize, okay, there's a chance for infinite progress. So how much can I assert that I'm making progress in relation to the infinite? So that keeps you really humble for eternity, because there is infinite prospect for progress. So whatever progress you make, you still have infinity in front of you, so to say. I mean, that shouldn't be a problem, of course. No? That's overwhelming, but that's not something that should be like, oh, I don't like that. I'm canceling my Vaikuntha project, no, because I will be eternally frustrated. No, that's not the idea. You're just realizing there's no limits to how much you can grow. It's overwhelming in its own way, but it's beautiful in its own way. Like if you're an artist and you're making music, to give an example, I'm just thinking of my own case. I remember when I will compose songs, I have to be very careful because I may go crazy very easily, because you are composing something and there are no limits to how much you can compose that something. And you start to have a glimpse of these things when you are entering to composition and being inspired. There's no limits, but at the same time, but it happens somehow with writing also. You write and it's like, there are no limits to what I can say and where I can go. But at one point I have to finish and publish the book, because if not, it will never end, because it's always. And that's the idea, to get a glimpse of that. That's why Mahaprabhu said, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Always engage in kirtan. And that always means something new. So yeah, the closer we get to the infinite, we'll be overwhelmed, because we will realize there are no limits here. No. Eternal growth, eternal expansion. So we'll be humble. The example given sometimes in this world is you're standing in front of the ocean, which is what somehow gets closer to infinity, in the sense of you will look at the ocean and you won't see beginning nor end. But it's not a problem. It's not like I feel so uncomfortable in front of this ocean because it's not limited. No, you feel humbled, but you feel in awe and wonder. You enter that place that we will call chamatkar, which is the essence of rasa. Rasa sar chamatkar. The essence of rasa is wonder. To remain in that space of wonder. No? Jesus will say, those who are like children can enter the kingdom of God, which is another way of saying the same thing. You have to remain that sense of wonder and astonishment and learning and perceiving everything to be potentially infinite. Somehow we have become adults, quote unquote, and now we have like professionalized our sense of wonder. We know when to feel wonder. We lost track of that. We don't know how to sense wonder. Everything is predictable and calculated and very serious and very adult-like. And we lost the keys of heaven because we lost access to wonder. So in one sense, spiritual life means stay in that state of wonder. And that's where reality is actually happening. And potentially is ever new wonder at every step. That's why Mahaprabhu will say, Prati Padam Purna Amrita Ashradanam. Ultimately, you will at every step be relishing the complete nectar of immortality. At every moment in transcendence, there is a new experience, wonder. Wow. Again, Anurag. Oh, Krishna is appearing as if new. Radha is appearing as if new. Everything is as if for the first time ever. This is not mere poetry. I mean, poetry is required to talk about those higher layers, but those higher layers are not merely a poetic device. Anyhow, some words regarding the interplay of love and humility. Yeah. Something else?
Hare Krishna.
Yeah, Valerie.
Is God love?
Is God love? Yes. Next question.
Will you share more? Because you were saying that God's goal is love and.
Yeah. But one thing doesn't cancel the other. Yeah, technically speaking, of course, Bible say things like that. Literally, God is love, or love is God. It says God is love. We are saying Radha and Krishna are non-different, which is another way of saying God is love, because Krishna is God and Radha is love, but Radha and Krishna are non-different. They are different, but they are non-different. Again, that's Veda Ved. That's a constant creative tension that we maintain always. Now, when we say they are non-different, when it starts to become too much of non-difference, but they are different. But it, when stars have gone too different, they're non-different. So we have to keep the two. You know, sometimes we go too much, I will say in our tradition, too much on the different side. Many times we lose sight of the non-dual foundation of things. So Radha and Krishna are one. So in that sense, yeah, Krishna is love. Krishna is made of love. Krishna, therefore, cannot not love. Because if you are made of love, you cannot go against that. You follow? You are made of love. You cannot not love. Tomorrow we'll talk more about that when we are speaking about how God loves every one of us unconditionally, because he cannot help but do that, because he is that. So when I'm saying he's attaining higher levels of love, it doesn't mean that that's something different from him. I'm just saying that the nature of love that God is made of is ever increasing. Again, I know that this is not the best tool to process this information, but that's as much as we can say in words. No? And of course, we can try our best. But God is love, but the love by definition is never satisfied with itself. And it's always looking for newer heights. And that is what propels God to become more God, so to say. No? That's... Like Chaitanya Charitamrita saying, Krishna, at every moment, at every nanosecond, Krishna is becoming more beautiful. Try to imagine that. And the name Krishna means the more beautiful, right? The all attractive. So Krishna is becoming more beautiful means Krishna is becoming more Krishna, the all attractive. Krishna is Krishnaizing himself at every second. He's increasing his beauty and his love. So that's the God we worship, a very dynamic one. And that's a beautiful challenge, because if I'm relating with someone who is constantly evolving, for me to relate to that person, I have to keep the pace of that person. And we want to worship a God who is always evolving. We have to be always evolving to keep pace with transcendence. You follow my point? Because, and that's what Chaitanya Charitamrita said, Krishna becomes more beautiful every second, but every second the love of the gopis is increasing to keep the peace with Krishna's beauty. Krishna increased beauty, gopis increased love to keep the pace. And the gopis increased love, make Krishna more beautiful. So one impacts on the other. Krishna's more beautiful, the love, the gopis increase their love to serve that new beauty. And that love makes him more beautiful, and that beauty makes them more loving. And the two of them, Krishna Das Kaviraj will say, enter into a competition in which none of them accept defeat. That's a poetic way of describing it. But yeah, God is love, and love is always evolving. Therefore, love is God is always evolving as well. And we are invited to do the same. Something else before concluding? Dasara Sutta Prabhu?
You used a phrase in the middle, something like maximal connectedness.
Really? I don't think so.
What was that phrase? It was two words that went together.
There were a few two words going together throughout the class. I don't know. But which word you say? We can use yours.
They were, but it sounded like a really good definition of prayoja. Because prayoja, Sanskrit is a living language. We pay attention to the one word, it pays attention back and expands a little. So like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the prayoja, sambandha abhideya prayoja, the goal of life, you expanded it as necessity. So prayoja comes, yojan comes from the same root as yoga, the verb root yoj, like that. So yojan, you add the prefix pra. Pra means prakarshana. Means in a very high, exalted, extremely intense way. So pra yojan means you're linking up with the ultimate in the highest possible maximal way. So you said some phrase that I can't remember what it was.
It happens, yeah. I
wrote it down.
Yeah, what to do. But thank you for the contribution of further elaboration on prayojan. Which is a beautiful word that we need to, especially when we deal with Sanskrit again, we must be very careful of not limiting meaning to one possible translation, so to say, right? who was raising hand? Swarga? Yes. We will need all your volume today. At least I will need it.
Thank you for speaking so wonderfully about this love, nature of love.
Mm.
And then we're also planning ahead for the celebration of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we're understanding that he, one of his reasons for coming is to give this love. Give this love to fallen people of this planet, of this universe, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So it's such an extraordinary blessing to be in association with hearing that this love is actually coming for to us. So what is the very best thing that we can do to be recipients of this tremendous blessing?
You tell me, please. What would you say if someone asked you that very same question?
What would I say?
Yeah.
He's given us the whole name.
Hmm.
And as you were describing last night, the hearing and the wanting that relationship with the name.
Okay.
Because everything is here, present. So it's very extraordinary that you're allowing such summer to happen. Really, thank you.
Thank you for your answer. And yeah, what can I add to that? As you mentioned, if we become aware of the nature of the gift, unprecedented gift that is knocking on our doors, that has already came to our lives, as we say today, the very goal of our lives came to us. The goal has extended to our particular place. Now that's the nature of Mahabhadanya Avatar, giving the highest thing even to the lowest direction. So what to do to reciprocate with that? I mean, first of all, to properly honor, conceive, and speak about the depths and breadth and nature and glories of that gift, so we really increase our awareness of what's the actual gift. Because we may think, okay, that was a gift, it feels good, cool, it's nice, but we may need to spend some time to explore what's the actual gift, the gift inside the gift, so to say, and to increase our commitment to the gift and to the givers of the gift, of course. They say first the giver, then the gift. and try to keep and understand the nature of the gift is ever evolving. So on a daily basis, we have to continue speaking about that, honoring that in sanghas we are doing now. And natural extension of that will be our own experience of that will sprinkle others. Naturally, because we will be full of that. So yeah, it's important that we spend time trying to measure, quote unquote, trying to measure, knowing we will never be able to measure it, but trying to make our best attempt to appreciate the boundless reach and depth of the gift. And through our sadhana and our practice, demonstrate our indebtedness and our gratitude by how carefully we try to, as you say, chant the name, associate with the Vaishnavas, engage in bhakti with care, with subtlety, with sensitiveness, with empathy, with tadatmya, and so on. So yeah, thank you. Thank you for reminding us of all this as well. Okay, so I think we are in time. I don't know if you want some little short kirtan before we conclude, or it's time for...
No, we're good. We have prasadam.
Okay.
If he has anything else to say, questions to ask.
Okay. If there is anything else, yes.
one quick reflection.
Yes, please.
Hearing you speak, I'm reflecting back to when I first took up bhakti practices, and one of the things that was said was, you can never stay static. Don't think that, you know, you chanted and you did some service and then, hey, you know, this is good. And, you know, I remember hearing so many times, you can't just stay in that place. You have to keep going. So your talk has really elucidated That point, even more. Why were they saying it? Okay, now it makes sense.
Okay, it's good that you received that one-liner for Samskar when you joined some years ago. So that's a good, of course, you have to understand how to apply that, because we can also say bhaktis never stop. You have to always keep going, and we can create also over exertion and exhaustion on Continue, because bhakti is ever evolving. You have to keep the pace of ever evolving Krishna's heart, and better sleep 2 hours and do not eat. Continue. I'm not saying we are, of course, promoting that, but just in case, I'm clarifying that that's not the point of my lecture. No, you can also take rest, and you can like restore your humanity, and that's important as well. That's equally important. No? Productivity and restoration. No. The two are aspects of bhakti, and the two are engaged in the service of this ever-evolving reality. But that's it. Yeah, I'm glad that somehow you are able to make some full circle what you heard some years ago. So thank you for that. Okay, so we'll conclude here. We'll be sharing prasad and sharing more informally, and of course, those who are interested, tomorrow we'll be having one program at Dira Govinda Prabhu's place. We will be talking, giving a lecture with him. We'll be talking on the unconditional love of Bhagavan, Mahaprabhu in particular, and the importance of understanding this principle of how we are being loved by God, not only as devotees, but everyone. That will be tomorrow. And Tuesday we'll have one last meeting at Tamal Krishna Prabhu's place. We'll be giving a lecture on what Gaur Purnima is all about. Let's see. Sri Satchinandan Gaur Hari ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Prabhu ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Gadadhar ju ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Nityananda ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Govinda ju ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Priman, Vancha Kalpataru Vishra Kripa Sindhu Bhye Vacha Patitanam Pavane Pyo Vaishnavya Bhyo Namo Anant Koti Vaishnavya Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Hari.